Osiris.
We are live. Live things are happening. This is the live show where we do it live. We talk live about live music. It makes us feel alive. It's a really good thing. My name is Brian Brinkman. I am here today solo running the ship. We have an awesome guest that we're going to bring on, which I'm very, very, very excited about here soon. We're going to bring on Marcus O'Neill. You guys can find online. He is Concert Vids 34. He has been, I would say, our super fan through these first 10 episodes, through this first quote season that we've had here of the live show. He has been an absolute workhorse for us, providing insight, information, feedback, commentary throughout each of our episodes. He has welcomed us into the Dave Matthews community with open arms, providing positive criticism, positive insights, further deep dives for us to dive into. We've been super appreciative of him. And it only makes sense that in our last episode, for now, covering the Dave Matthews Band Live Track Series, we bring him on and we talk about a really interesting 10th volume in this series. This volume finds the band once again in 2007, the spring of 2007, in Lisbon, Portugal. We're going to talk about the tour that they went on in kind of May of 2007, where they went to Australia, they went to Europe, the show in hand, the guest that they brought on later in the episode, and also kind of this transitional point that the band was in. We've talked a lot about 2004, we've talked a lot about 2001, even though we haven't featured any shows from 2001. We've talked a lot about 2005 and kind of the challenges of this band writing a bunch of songs that were really, really welcomed and loved by the larger fan base, but the band then kind of zagged, went into a different direction, and put a bunch of new songs out on new records that were not necessarily loved by the larger fan base. And then 2007, there's some more new songs that come on, but there's some transition afoot, and the band is about to undergo a unexpected and extremely significant change that is going to happen within the next calendar year. So I'm really excited to dive into this. We're going to get to it in one second. I just want to tell you really, really quickly about two upcoming Osiris live events that we have. Last night, RJ hosted our first Osiris live event of the summer. We had Tom Hamilton of J-Rad, Chris Forsyth, as well as Daniel Donato, interviewed by RJ, and then featured with a backing band comprising of Ryan Jewell, as well as Andy Cush, that really showcased power of the guitar, as well as what Osiris live events are about, which is deep dives into conversation and then live music. We have three more coming up. We have one that will be happening on August 6th and 7th in Atlantic City at the Anchor Rock Club. This is kind of a combination of Osiris Live and HF Pod. This will be going on at the Anchor Rock Club from 2 to 4 p.m. These are free events. Saturday, August 6th, will feature John Barber of the Disco Biscuits on acoustic guitar. Sunday, August 7th, will be an auction benefiting Water Wheel. We want to thank Tonewood Brewing Company once again for sponsoring these. You can get your tickets to reserve your spots at osirispod.com/osirislive. HF Pod will be there as well on Saturday and Sunday to recap Fish's live shows from Atlantic City that weekend. And in addition to that, we just announced this about an hour and a half ago, Osiris Live at the Cooperage in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Thursday, August 11th, music and conversation featuring Riley Walker. Riley Walker, who has a connection to Dave Matthews Band. He did a full cover in 2018 of the Lily White Sessions, which was really, really awesome. That was just announced. Tickets are $15 in advance, $20 a day of show. Get your tickets at osirispod.com/osirislive. And then finally, to kick off the final weekend of Fish's Summer 2022 tour, Osiris Live at Larimer Lounge here in Denver, Colorado, Wednesday, August 31st. We have music and conversation featuring Taper's Choice, amazing new jam band that's been around since late 2021. Chris Thompson, Dave Harrington, Alex Bleeker, among others. Really, really, really sick jamming, incredible sounds. Myself and Jonathan Hart are going to be interviewing them, and then we will have a full show from Taper's Choice. Once again, all Osiris Live tickets can be purchased at osirispod.com/osirislive. All right, with that, let's go ahead. Let's bring Marcus on. Let's dive into Dave Matthews 52507 from Lisbon, Portugal. Marcus, how are you doing, man? Welcome to the live show.
I'm doing well, and I'm happy to talk some D&B with you.
Likewise, dude. We were connected because you had so many great thoughts, so many great insights as our show was launching about 3 weeks ago. I think it was our very first episode on 12/8/98 that you posted a full video recap to our video recap, and I was like, already episode one, we've got commentary on the commentary. This is amazing stuff. So thank you so much. It's been awesome.
Yeah. And it's awesome to just have more conversations about D&B come up via your podcast and this awesome show.
I'm right there with you, man. I think it's a really interesting, I think it's a good way to get into the topic at hand. Dave Matthews Band for me, as I've talked about throughout this series, they were a huge entry point. Like we talked about this with Matt Dwyer around Live Track 7. It was this kind of coming of age moment when you discovered Dave Matthews Band. Going to a Dave Matthews Band concert was a really, really huge stepping stone for teenagers in the 1990s and early 2000s. And it was really the first time I went to a concert where it felt like anything was possible. I went to a lot of concerts as a kid, a lot of alternative rock concerts. My parents took me to Bruce Springsteen shows, to U2. And I loved all those concerts, but they all felt very much like there was a production at hand and there was a script that was being followed. And when you walked away from the show, you got something out of it, but you didn't feel like you walked into that danger zone, that kind of unknown of like, oh shit, something could go wrong up on stage and we're just figuring out as we go along. And when I first listened to Dave Matthews Band, I got that sensation of like, something could go wrong on stage, and that's a cool thing. Like someone could miss a note, and it's totally unplanned. So I'm curious for you, what was your introduction to Dave Matthews, and kind of where are you at with the band at this point in time?
Yeah, so my introduction started around this 2007 era, the LimeWire era, where people were making mixed CDs, sharing music. At that time, in 07, I was listening to Lil Wayne mixtapes. I was listening to Linkin Park was my favorite rock band. I was listening to Incubus. Light Grenades came out 2 years prior to this. I was into alt rock. I was into hard rock. I was into hip hop and all of this stuff being accessed for free. And at that time, I listened to Ants Marching. I listened to Number 41. I say, these are really cool studio tracks.
Yeah.
But I had no idea about the live show. You could say, hey, well, Red Rocks was out there on LimeWire. This was out. But no, I was, my friends were giving me the studio cuts. And they were also, I'm 16, 17 in 2007. So they were giving me the studio cuts. I thought it was cool. But I kind of put them on the back burner of, yes, I'll listen to them every now and then. The iPod comes out. I put them on Ants Marching every now and then. But in 2012, I graduate college here in Connecticut. And my friend takes me to my first show, 525 as well, 52512.
Wow.
And the Stone opens the show. And from the first notes of the Stone, I said, this isn't just some band that makes great studio albums. This is a, like you said, it's an unplanned, improv, anything can happen type show. And all the other shows, the Linkin Parks, the J. Cole's, all this stuff I was going to, that's cool. But I want to see this Dave Matthews Band every year as much as I can and really experience a fresh show every time I go.
Yeah, it's interesting because like I was also introduced to the band via their studio cuts. Crash and Before These Crowded Streets were my first albums. And, you know, at the time I was getting these, I think we're about like 7 or 8 years apart. So like we experienced both like that LimeWire Napster era in similar time frames, but like at different ages. For me, it was like right as I was going into college, it was suddenly like, holy crap, every single bit of music is available at my disposal. But I also was going through this, the idea of getting a live bootleg or a live show didn't totally appeal to me at 16, 17 as it does now. And it wasn't until I heard Live at Red Rocks that I got that sensation. I was right there with you where like I was getting the studio cuts, which are exploratory in and of themselves. But then there's that sensation of, okay, anything can happen here. So you see your first show in 2012. What, and I'm looking at the set list right now, like you've got The Stone, you got One Sweet World, you got Crush, you got Jimmy Thing, Crash Into Me, Granny, Pantala Nagapampa, Rapunzel. And then you've got a bunch of songs that like, I admittedly, like these are all like new songs to me. These are songs like, as we go through the live track series, I'm excited to be discovering. What has it been like for you over the last 10 years, seeing Dave Matthews Band evolve and kind of where are you at with the band? Like, how do you see the band now 10 years in?
So initially when I started in 2012, I loved the live sound, but about as it went forward, I kept listening to live stuff. I was like, wait, why do they have Tim's guitar turned up so much? Why is there like, what happened to that? How did they go from in 2007, we're going to talk today, this acoustic percussive masterpiece to then in 2008 and then through 2018, how did they go from this acoustic band to this rock band? And I enjoyed some of the elements of that. I loved some of Tim's solos and I loved Rashawn at times. But initially, as I got 5 years in, I'm like, I want that classic sound. We then hit the two sets, 2014, 2015. They decided the first set of the show is going to be acoustic. We're going to have a set break and have electric. And I got everything I wanted. I got the acoustic stuff that I never was able to experience in person. And I got the electric stuff that was awesome as well. We then flash forward to really 2018. Boyd is no longer with the band. There was always a divide in 2016. I started to see like he just was not himself and he was disconnected from the band. You could see on stage he was disconnected. They were writing him out of new songs.
Interesting.
In 2018, Buddy Strong comes in. He had toured with Usher, Ariana Grande. He was like a pop keys player.
Yeah.
And then in 2018, they kind of have their testing. And then in 2019 and 2021, this band changes its sound a little bit to have a little more of a softer sound and a little bit of a mid-level sound that they hadn't had since 2007. And right now, 2022, this tour has been awesome because the sound, they have their identity in this post-Roy, post-Boyd era. And I'm excited. I've already seen 8 shows full band. I have 1 Dave and Tim show, but I'm excited for this next couple of years because they sound great. They have this chemistry and they have this joy, right? They don't have this, they don't have like the Fish hiatuses. They don't have the Pearl Jam. We're going to play 4 shows just to have our like rest. We're going to play 4 shows in North America. That's it. They're playing every year and they found a joy that they haven't had in over a decade in 2021, 2022. That is exciting for me as I move forward.
So we're 15 years on from this show here in Portugal. Like it sounds to me like one thing when you look at the band and I'm guessing this is kind of larger within the larger fan base, they've kind of been adrift for the last 15 years in various cases. And obviously like the tragedy of losing Leroy a year following these shows is going to have a huge impact, but sonically there's a lot of testing the waters. That 2014 run that you talked about, and we talked about this a bit in Live Track 7, just like the two set model and how that impacts a band. Do you think that approach like pleased the larger fan base and was something that people like want the band to bring back, or was it kind of just, was it seen as a gimmick in any sort of way?
So there were mixed feelings, and a lot of the fans of DMB intersect on the pop side and on the jam band, Dead, Umphreys, Fish. So a lot of the fans that are on that jam band side, at first they were like, hey, we got two sets. Like that's what this is awesome. But what happened was the acoustic set for some of the people who love jam bands, the acoustic sets were more predictable. There was a little bit more of less songs were being played in the acoustic set. So some fans criticized the fact that you really got, if you went to five or six shows, you were getting a lot of the same stuff more frequently. And also the momentum, some people thought the momentum of those shows wasn't like a, like DMB is, DMB is a high energy band. They're not like, I don't consider them a jam band, but they're not like other real jam bands that can do two solid set. Like they have to keep playing. So some people were on that end. There are people to this day in the comments on my videos. Some of them want that format back because they love the acoustic set. And they say, hey, I know they play the same stuff in the acoustic set. They didn't have that repetition, but I want to hear that unique sound of, for one set, they're doing that old school sound. For the second set, they bring us to this fuller, livelier, dance all night type electric set. So it's mixed. You'll hear people from both sides that want it back and some people who want to keep it as it is now.
Hmm. And so you think in addition to that, like there have been so many changes within the band, there have been so many changes from a sonic standpoint that they're really reaching something of a, like a later career peak here in 2021 and 2022.
Absolutely. And it's like Tom Brady changing his diet, right? And getting a personal trainer, and or Michael Jordan didn't lift weights until the end of his career.
Sure. They, that's a really good point.
Point where they're working smarter and they have to work harder because to keep this momentum, they have, like Carter has to do a lot more to be able to be where he's at. But you're seeing that, hey, they're not who they used to be, but they have gotten so smart that they're giving the fans what they want this tour. Some people are always going to complain, but you have shows where the diehard fan like me gets a pay for what you get at SPAC, but they also play the crush. And the one thing you can't knock DMB on in this era, they are playing to their audience. They can read the, they know who's coming to that show. They know if diehards or cash, what that mix is, and the set lists represent playing a show that that crowd is going to love.
It's really interesting because I think about this with the Grateful Dead. I think about this with Phish, and I don't mean to make like direct comparisons, but like the reason why I bring both up is the Grateful Dead end in 1995 because you know of health related reasons to their lead singer. And it's something that like was happening to a lot of rock bands that came out of the 1960s and 1970s when health, wellness, taking care of yourself really wasn't advocated for and really wasn't celebrated. Like the idea of being a rock star was to just like live to excess and burn out. And, you know, we saw with Phish that Trey had, you know, some significant substance abuse challenges and issues that had to be resolved. And once they were resolved, the band was able to get back together, get back on the road and really be in a position where they're healthy, they're happy, they're playing the amount of shows that they want to play. And as a result, like from the Phish community, 2021 was really seen as a high watermark for the band in a lot of cases. And I wonder, like, I just recently saw a picture of Dave in what looked like the back of his bus, like doing weights. And there's all these videos of Bob Weir, like working his ass off in between shows. And I wonder, like, to what you're talking about, like that athletic comparison you're making, where like as an athlete ages, they have to change their diet. Chris Paul goes like, he cuts all sugar out of his diet. He's now playing high end basketball at the age 37. Tom Brady is going to play football until he's 45. LeBron goes into like a cryo chamber at the end of every game. And he's going to play until he's like 42 years old at an incredibly high level. Like Dave Matthews Band, Phish, they're like showing Bob Weir. They're showing what happens when you add health and wellness. And it makes me really interested to talk about this era, 2007, because something that I heard in the 2006 show and something I wonder is like, was that being valued as much in this era as it is today?
As far as the health and wellness?
Yeah. As far as like the longevity aspect of it and like the ability to like keep this whole thing going.
Yeah. I think when we look at Boyd, I think he was the one that was most taxed and fatigued. He was like, you know, some of the rock stars, the Jerry Garcia, like he was the one that was going to be the most kind of affected by those wear and tear miles. I think Dave in this era, the 07 era, he's just starting to have a family. And that kind of, Dave used to drink a lot. He battled demons. He lost his father young. He lost his sister to gun violence. He lost his uncle right around the Lily White Sessions era. So in 07, Dave is starting to, from what I know, he's starting to have a family, and his mindset of like doing all the heavy stuff is starting to change as far as that health and wellness. And they are at this point, they're bringing in Rashawn. He was brought in 05. They're bringing people like Rashawn in to give energy to this band and to give it new life and really help. That energy load is being shared with another person on stage like Rashawn.
Let's talk about this, because so this show happens at a really interesting time. It's basically the halfway mark in Dave Matthews Band's career to this point. They start in 91. Yeah. This is 07. They're 16 years in. We're now 15 years past that. This happens at the Altice Arena in Lisbon, which just a quick bit of history. This was built in 1998 for the Expo 98. It's one of the biggest indoor venues in Europe. It's 20,000 people inside. Prior to this, the biggest venue in Portugal was 4,000. So this gave like a huge boost for concerts, for live events that could happen in Portugal. I found this really interesting. The venue was deliberately built for the facade to face south and be dug four stories below the ground to reduce the need for heating and AC. So late 90s, Europeans are thinking about climate change in a way that we would never even consider at that point as we were building venues. This was also the host of the 2018 Eurovision contest. Just to extend the sports knowledge here and sports facts, as we were talking about athletes extending their career, this happens 1 week to the day before LeBron James arrives on the basketball stage and dominates the Detroit Pistons in game five of the Eastern Conference Finals. A huge, huge moment in time. So we've talked a bunch here about kind of where the band was at, but I want to just like focus on this again here for a second. We talked in the last episode about the Vegas run. So walk me through, we did the Fenway shows from Summer 06. And from what I can tell, Summer 06 was kind of this long tour where I don't know how much the Fenway shows, and you can tell me better than I can, how much the Fenway shows showcased what the tour was like. But my impression and my takeaway from those shows was two things. One, a lot of songs are coming back in ways that they hadn't been played in the previous few years. And Dave is really chippy with the audience about new songs that they're debuting that don't seem to be super popular. And from what I understand, the band plays into October and then there are no shows, no full Dave Matthews Band shows until March. Tell me where I'm right, where I'm wrong. Fill in the details there for me, the 2006 into 2007 range.
Yeah, so 06, they go in the studio with Mark Batson. He produced Stand Up. He's a hip-hop producer as well. He's worked with Eminem. So in 06, they have a spring session and a winter session where they're trying to record like Break Free, Break For It, Shotgun. There's some unreleased stuff like Bullets and Rum and ABC, which is just a jam track. So they're testing those songs out all through 2006. And they start the year in the spring trying to record it. They have some recordings. They record some stuff in the winter of 2006 when, like you said, there were no shows. Then they go back to Batson. And 2006 is a showcase of, hey, here's some new songs. Here's some songs we're going to bring back, like you said, in new ways with Rashawn on trumpet. And then we get into 2007. And you want me to talk about 07?
Yeah, bring us into 07 and kind of what was happening.
Yeah, so 2007 is a year where you have a lot of huge releases from the band and you have a lot of big moments. We talked about Live Tracks 9 in March of 2007. They go to Vegas. Now, those shows, they're not my, I don't listen back to them much, but those were big because DMB is hitting up Vegas. This is the ultimate road trip for fans, just like other bands, like when a Fish goes to some part of the middle of nowhere and everyone travels. Or Fish, you know, another band will perform at this destination venue in the Bahamas or just like the Mexico shows, the Riviera Mayas. So people went to those shows. That was big because that was a one-of-a-kind type trip. We then get to April in April has the most important visual performance of Dave Matthews and Tim Reynolds. They play UMass the night before, Amherst, Massachusetts at the Mullen Center. They go the next day and they play Radio City Music Hall. It's a sellout. It's huge demand show. And that gets put on DVD later in the year. And that's probably the biggest, again, it's the most important visual for Dave and Tim. So that's a month before these shows.
Yeah.
We then get to Live Tracks 10, which we'll talk about in a moment. But after Live Tracks 10, they go on a full summer tour after Europe. And September is huge. They play the Gorge. They have their Gorge weekend, August 31st and September 2nd. A couple of days later, they're invited to Virginia Tech, and Virginia Tech wanted to have a concert. There was a shooting in April of 07 on campus. They want to have a show to kind of raise the spirits of the community as they go. People go back to school with these scars of a tragedy. And John Mayer comes on stage and performs some, with them, Number 41. And John Mayer, who's my generation, I'm born in 1990. He's the most important guitarist for me as a guitarist of my generation.
Yeah.
He goes on stage. He says, "I am who I am because of Dave Matthews." And he is at a big part of his career, you know, acknowledging this. He talks in years later, John talks about going to Jones Beach in 95, 96 ish from Connecticut to see Dave Matthews. That was one of his earliest memories. You take a couple of days off. You go down to Atlanta, Georgia at Piedmont Park. And Greg Allman, and rest in peace to Greg Allman. I have an Allman Brothers poster behind me. He comes in and sings with the band as well. He's the Allman Brothers open up for them. And imagine that Allman Brothers. Dave Matthews band's going to open, going to be the main performer in your own city or your adopted city. They're from Macon. So you have that. And then, you know, you pass to the 14th of September and the band has an awesome West Palm Beach run with a lot of improv, just like we see in Live Tracks 10, a lot of jams. And they perform, they open the show with A Dream So Real, which is like unheard of. It's a rare song. So September of 07 is a huge month. And this is the last year to me. Dave has his Taylor 914C signature. This is the last year where you have this acoustic percussive greatness from the band before they start to be a little bit more rock and electric guitar based.
So that's incredible context. I really appreciate you breaking that down, and it helps to really understand where the band is at in 2007, because as I was listening to this show, you know, it's really interesting to me a couple of things. And one thing we talked about in the Vegas set was it felt like Dave Matthews Band review. And it felt like this sense of, and it kind of hints at it with John Mayer's speech before he comes on stage with the band at Virginia Tech. This idea that like Dave Matthews Band has kind of crossed this imaginary threshold by 2007 from up and coming band to current band to now they're like a legacy act in a lot of cases. They're 15 years in, and this is around the time where a lot of artists start to make decisions that tend to not be super popular with core fans. You know, they have to change, they have to evolve to keep going. And so this idea of transitioning into a rock sound is something that's coming for them to keep themselves fresh from a creative standpoint. But as I'm looking through the set list of this overall show, it's really wild how basically the first 8 songs of this show, you know, you've got Every Day, you've got Crash Into Me, you've got Gray Street, but like there's an argument to be made that outside of Crash Into Me, all of these songs are relatively new songs still for the band in 2007. You know, we're talking at the latest 7 years old for Every Day and Gray Street. It's really fascinating to me that like they're pushing so heavily in the first half of the show, new material. And it's this kind of back and forth tension I find about the band at this point in time, where do we celebrate the past or do we push ourselves into kind of the future of where we think the band needs to go? What are your thoughts on like the first half of this show and like how much new material is pushed here?
Yeah, it's a very bold approach to being their first show in Portugal to have these newer songs. And what you'll notice, typically European shows are quieter. They do play a little bit, like they'll play the O2 or something. They're usually like the crowd is like a play or orchestra. They clap and they wait for the next song. They don't talk during the song, then they clap. This show, you see that even someone who's in America watching this set list is like, every day, Dream Girl, by you. You see that the hardcore fan may look at this set, not listen, and be like, I want some classics. Sure. But at the live show, I see this every, even to this day, at the live show, the band loves Every Day. They're singing that. Dream Girl gets a lot of energy. Hunger for the Great Light and Bayou. The crowd loves this fresh material. And it's always been that divide of, you know, the hardcore fan and sometimes myself, what we feel about stuff and what the crowd feels. And even though they take this risk, they play all this new stuff early, all these fans are going nuts for this new material and for, and it's unique. It's weird when I'm listening to this every time. I'm like, they're in 07. They're really playing these unique songs. Like, it's really weird to listen through and not really hear anything outside of Crash that's a classic songs. Yeah. So.
What are your thoughts on kind of new material and like, you know, as someone, like when I came into the Dave Matthews Band, it was like late 90s, early 2000s. And the first new material that I heard was all the Lily White session songs. And so like I had Before These Crowded Streets, I had Crash, I went out and bought Under the Table and Dreaming. And so the shows that were happening at that time, I knew all those songs. Those were all familiar. There was never a set list that would come across where I'd be like, I don't know what that is. And then suddenly summer 2000, new songs start popping up. And those new songs felt like classics almost immediately. And that kind of permeated through the fan base. The first time I experienced, I don't really like these new songs, and the fan base doesn't really like these new songs, was the Every Day songs, which didn't get road tested. They just got released and then were suddenly played, you know, in at length in summer 2001. What are your thoughts as you're into the band on new material and on the band pushing new material?
So I look back at this era as someone who hadn't been to a show yet. And outside of the stand-up songs, everything pre-2012 to me sounds amazing. Like Idea of You in this set at number 8. Like, I'm like, wow, this is amazing. I think what happens to me is in the stuff from Away From the World, some of the Big Whiskey stuff, you know, you could argue in 09, and the Come Tomorrow music, some of that music, and I think it's because Dave just has a good life, right? He's married, he's successful, you know, as a father and as just a person who's built this wealth and success. So as he got to this point, the some of the Big Whiskey, some of the, a lot of the Away From the World stuff, I didn't really like in the live show. I thought it kind of took away from sets. I thought it wasn't as risky as when Dave is more of a single guy in 2000, you know, he's running around in 2000, like younger, like, oh, yeah. I have this great idea. And it reminds me of Roger Waters. I don't like, I saw him a couple years ago and like his new, obviously you get to a point, you can't write like you used to. So some of the newer, the last couple of albums, some of the music I don't like. What's crazy is some of the music that they've played from these last couple albums that only got a couple of plays are my favorite songs. So in recent years, the last decade, the songs that they overplay are not, they're not as good. The songs that they kind of tested and say, I don't know if we're going to play this again in the last decade. I'm like, no, you need to play that. You need to play the riff. You need to play Broken Things. So it's an interesting just dynamic with this band that some of the stuff they kind of don't, Dave just doesn't feel confident with, people love. So
yeah, it's wild. So like what you're saying reminds me of, are you a Wilco fan at all?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Well, it'll tie to what you're saying. Like, and we're going to talk about Wilco on this podcast at some point down the road, cause they have a ton of live releases in their road case, but there's a really controversial point in Wilco's career where Jeff Tweedy was having a ton of, issues with, pharmaceuticals. He had really bad migraines, which led to prescriptions, which led to problems. And he ended up releasing a, they released a really great record in 2004 that's like tortured. It's called A Ghost Is Born. And the band went through like changes, and then they come back in 2007 with this record, Sky Blue Sky, and it's post Jeff going through rehab and really like finding kind of peace and happiness, and financial success comes along, stability comes along. The band is now like fully set as a band, and he releases this record, and it's like the sunniest Wilco record ever. And the fan base was like, what the hell is going on? Like, what, where is all like the angry, tortured music that you made that we all loved? And he, in an interview, was like, can't I just write about being happy? And I kind of get that sensation of what you're talking about with Dave is like, he's, this is what his life is like at this point in time. So of course, this is what he's going to write about. And it was something I was talking about in the last episode that's really fascinating to me, is like at the crux of so many of Dave Matthews' songs, even if you go way back in time, is this sensation of, I know that this moment in time is really difficult, and I know nothing looks promising, but here's why I have hope. Here's why I see light at the end of the tunnel. And the song Hunger for the Great Light like feels like such a significant message in that, where like he's really talking about something very vague, but it's something we can all understand, that like through darkness there's going to be light at the end of the tunnel. And yet the dichotomy of that conflict that he always wrote about seemed to be what interests so many people, and now he's at a point where he's writing about just simply like finding the light and appreciating the light. And that seems to me to be like kind of the struggle that you find with some of the newer material.
Yeah. And even Hunger for the Great Light, the stuff after it is just all happy. And like the best part of, I love about DMB and Dave, his writing, a song like Pig, right? Yeah. A song like Dancing Nancy's, it gives you the dark and the light in the same song.
Totally.
And that's what, like, when I think about my life, some of the things I've been through, that's the music that hits me the most. The stuff that's just all the way, like, you and me together, we can do it. No, I don't. That's too happy. And but that's also interesting, yeah, because as a fan, I now have the understanding, you know, tomorrow is the anniversary of the loss of Chester Bennington, and it's Chris Cornell's birthday. And he passed, you know, both of them passing in the same year hurt me. But I ultimately, what I've come to is, I would rather have Dave Matthews happy than like some of the artists right now who are selling their catalogs just to make ends meet, who are going to rehab, who are getting arrested again for substance abuse. I'd rather have him happy and me just kind of laugh about a song I don't like You and Me, than have a person who's still being tormented, making great music, but he's not happy himself. That's kind of the maturity I've gotten in the last 3 or 4 years. I say, hey, I'm glad that Dave is having a good life.
Well, and it's a good way to like jump back to this show, because it's the longevity aspect that we were talking about. Like, I remember at the onset of the 2020s, one of the thoughts that just like flashed through my mind on New Year's 2019 into 2020 was, the sensation that like we're going to leave the 2020s with a lot of these classic rock artists gone. The amount of artists that I grew up with, I'm sure you grew up with, like that are going to leave us at this point in time are gone. And people like Dave Matthews are going to be, even, you know, like John Mayer, he's in middle age at this point in time. These are going to be the artists that kind of carry us through the next 2 or 3 decades in terms of, you know, live music, in terms of live rock creativity. We want them to be in a place where like they're able to keep doing that, and health, happiness, wealth to a certain degree all kind of lead to that. One of the themes that I kind of was thinking about, and it's related to all of this, is the idea of like Dave Matthews Band as one of the last American bands that can really, really do a world tour. And kind of just, I want to hone in on this for a bit here with this show. So they do this tour. It's about a month long. It starts in, just pulling it up right now. It starts in Australia on May 1st, and it extends until May 30th at Wembley Arena in the UK. And they hit up Australia, they hit up Ireland, they hit up Lisbon, Belgium, the Netherlands, the UK. And then they head back, they take about a month off and they head back to the US and do a full US tour. Tell me, like, at this point in 2007, is this a unique aspect of them going ahead and doing world tours, like, you know, going across the pond, playing Europe, playing Australia? Is this something that's unique for them at this point in time?
So the Australia part of that, the fact that they start the year off going overseas. So they start the year off going overseas, then they come back.
And those are Dave and Tim shows, right?
Yeah, the beginning. Yeah. So Dave and Tim start overseas, right? And then Dave says, hey, I'm coming back with the full band. That's extremely unique to have that. And then the Australia, like, they actually had to cancel because of C-19. They had to cancel that in 2020, but they don't go to Australia that often. It's very rare.
Yeah.
So to have that Australia, to have a Dave and Tim and Dave full band in the European market, that's what makes this year special. They go back to Europe with the full band in 2009, and, you know, that's cool. But, like, this is a touring year where they go everywhere and they double Europe up with both sets of acts. So.
Do you think that the pressure of being in a band that can play in Europe and can play for 20,000 people in Europe is a part of the challenges for this band, or is it like I just say that in the sense that, like, they have a fan base that is essentially global, and that can lead to a lot of expectations around their own evolution. And we see it with a band like U2 that could play a 50,000 seat arena in basically any country in the world. Part of the challenge of that is you're the biggest rock band on the planet. How do you keep evolving and keep changing and keep updating your catalog in the manner that you did at your quote unquote peak? Do you think that that adds to pressure for Dave? If they were a smaller band, that there'd be less pressure on them?
So I actually think, again, going back, I'm a Linkin Park fan. I'm a Dave Matthews Band fan. I've seen what Pearl Jam and U2 have done. I've seen rappers who are not popular over here. They go to Europe and they sell out. So I think that going to Europe, especially now, they have less pressure to put on a set than they do in America. And a lot of bands you've seen, like Pearl Jam, they'll just say, hey, we're going to Europe. So I think that they may have a little nerve of, hey, this is the first time we're here. But the fans in Portugal, the fans in France and in Germany and all these countries, they're just happy to have the band there.
Yeah.
And it kind of creates, like we see in this show, we see an appreciation for whatever they're going to play. They're not, you know, I'm doubting that there's people there like, why did they play Louisiana Bayou? They're just like, hey, I've never seen DMB in my home country. Or, hey, I have a pass, you know, I'm going across from Spain and I'm going to go to this Portugal show. I only have to go one country over. I don't have to fly to the States. So I think it is a little bit less pressure. There's less people stalking them overseas. There are some American fans do, but there's less, like, they can go out in Europe and just walk amongst the people and people won't notice them. So totally. It's almost like a better thing for them to have that break, go overseas, and then you come back to America refreshed.
Yeah, it's a really good point. And, like, I think in a sense, as an American who's traveled to Europe, there's a sense of, like, okay, there's enough familiarity here, but there's also enough difference that, like, I don't feel totally out of my element, but in many of these countries, I don't speak the language. There's food that we don't necessarily have here in America. There's architecture that doesn't look like you're in America. And that can add to kind of an element of, like, the creative expression beyond what you're usually at. The other thought, and kind of getting to the set list here, we talked a bit about the first half of this show. Basically, from So Much to Say through the encore, it suddenly feels like a classic Dave Matthews show to me in a lot of cases. It feels like they played this segment of the show that is very, very dedicated to new material. And not that they wanted to get it out of the way. It's really bold to me. I think you said that earlier, that they would start a show like this with so many new songs. But then from there, you get So Much to Say, Anyone See the Bridge, Too Much, Sister, which is a relatively new, quieter song at that point in time, I believe. But then Liner Graves, 41, American Baby intro, Two Step, Ants Marching, and then the double encore of Gravedigger, Jimmy Things Stay, and then Don't Drink the Water, and Pantala, Nagapampa, and Rapunzel. I'm looking at, and I think you said this in one of our previous episodes, the show flow on Ants Marching tends to work towards the extremes. And it's interesting to me that the people in attendance have such extremes about this show. They despise Louisiana Bayou and Gravedigger in this show. They love Gray Street, the idea of you. They love Two Step, American Baby. But then the people who were not in attendance and the overall average is kind of somewhere towards the middle. Tell me, as we move into the second half of the show, what are your big highlights of here and what are kind of the significant moments to you?
So the highlight, I do marathons and half marathons.
Same, dude. That's awesome.
Although the marathons, I kind of retired from that.
They're hard. They're not fun.
Yeah. But when I was training for my first marathon in 2013, I took Lionel Graves, 41, American Baby intro, Two Step, and Ants Marching. And I would run the first half of my run, my distance run, without music, because you get your head starts to explode. And the second half of that run, I get to the halfway point, and those jams, the Lionel Graves, 41, ABI, or American Baby intro, Two Step, like those jams right before Ants Marching, and then Ants is just awesome. Who cares if it's 7 minutes? That is like the best part of that show. And I used to pick that out 2013. I did it in 2015 for a half marathon training run. Like I just used to pick that part out and listen to it and get motivated to finish, 10, 12 miles, 13 miles of a training run. And I love how these jams just organically get to 15 minutes. One of my knocks on D&B nowadays, some of their jams can be too long and it gets boring. But this, with Tom Morello hopping in, and I'm a huge Audioslave fan. Once I got into Audioslave, I went back to Rage Against the Machine because I was in preschool when they were, I'm a younger. So I love how Tom Morello, who, again, one of my favorite guitarists, I thought when I first listened to this and I heard he was on there, I'm thinking, oh, he's going to have his electric guitar, his wah pedal. I love how Tom Morello says, hey, I'm going to match DMB's environment and I'm going to bust out an acoustic guitar, which I typically don't do. I'm still going to be myself, which he is on these, but he enhances these jams and he does it on an acoustic guitar. And I think if you look back at Tom Morello's career, if they have some sort of anthology, they should pull some, if DMB lets them, if they have access, they should pull some of these things he sits in on, because it's some of the coolest things I've ever seen Tom Morello sit in on an instrument, the acoustic guitar, that you don't really see him on very often.
Yeah, it's interesting because the first time I listened through this, I was like, I can't wait to hear what that wah guitar sounds like, the like scratching, the muting that he does. Yeah. Because, I'm, like I said, I'm a little older than you. I Rage Against the Machine was like a huge band for me in middle school and early high school. And then obviously, like when you say, oh my God, Chris Cornell is going to front in front of Rage Against the Machine's rhythm and guitar segment, you're in and in high school. And I saw Tom Morello with Bruce Springsteen in 2012. He sat in for Ghost of Tom Joad, which was the song that Rage Against the Machine covered. He came out with like the electric guitar and like it was a huge, huge moment. I was like, this is going to be incredible to hear this with Dave Matthews Band. And then I listened through and I was like, wait, where is he? And I was like, is this a different Tom Morello? And then I went back and listened to it. And what you're describing, like there's kind of a subtlety and there's a nuance to what he's playing that it's fascinating to me that we've reached a point in the mid 2000s where Tom Morello can sit in with the Dave Matthews Band and he brings his style to what the Dave Matthews Band is playing at that point in time. And he complements it rather than not detracts, but rather than like makes him the star of it. He's adding a ton of nuance to it. It's pretty impressive that he was able to do that and that the band was able to do that at this point in time.
Absolutely. And I love how the band kind of listens to what Tom is doing. And Carter's drumming is perfect. Everyone else is allowing him. They're listening. Okay, we got to do this. We got to shift to that. And I don't know, regardless if it was rehearsed or not, DMB did a great job of listening actively to what Tom was doing, all his runs and hops and skips and his scratching with the acoustic guitar. The band does a great job of just allowing, you know, just complimenting what he's doing.
And it really highlights, I mean, these are my two favorite moments of this overall show, 41 and the American Baby intro. And I want to highlight, we've talked a lot about 41 and I think the jam is great, but tell me a little bit as we get close to wrapping up, tell me a little bit about the American Baby intro. Cause this, I think I could be wrong. I think we've had three American Baby intros in the first 10 volumes. And we've only had one American Baby, which I think was the Fenway shows. Tell me about this song and tell me kind of like how this is utilized within our larger catalog.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And funny thing, American Baby is the highest charting
Dave Matthews song.
And it's, but like, it just didn't get the live appeal. But American Baby intro, which is just on this, on Stand Up, is just, oh, it's just quick little snippet before the main song. They started really having this dynamic build that nobody can do but Dave Matthews and the Dave Matthews Band. And it just became this moment in any given show from 05 to really the mid, like 2010-ish,
okay,
where you have this slow buildup. You have these lyrics, like she says 100 times, 1,000 times, but like the buildup of dynamics gets a crowd rocking. Like it really gets, and I think it was perfect for this rowdy crowd here in Portugal. It's the way this thing builds up, the way the violin like grabs your heart out and it takes you on the journey, and you're holding on as they build up to this epic crescendo and then they bring it back down. And it's just, the people I know who have been to this era of the band, they're just like, you sit there and you're like, this is one of the best things I've ever heard from the band. I didn't think in a 2005 song could have such a purpose to the equivalent. It's up there with some of the best DMB songs that you can feel live. So.
Yeah, I agree. I get a ton out of this, and it's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. It's really, like you said, it's the dynamics. It reminds me a lot of Phish has this song called The Curtain. And in the late 80s, it was called The Curtain With, and it had this segment of music that was added on to the initial composition, and it was stretched out, and it's really dynamic, and it's really powerful when you hear it live. And then at some point in the late 1980s, they cut that last part, and they turned the melody into the solo off of the song Rift. And throughout the whole 1990s, nobody ever heard it. And then it came back and it was added on in the late, in 2000. They played their last show ever, in quotes, in 2004, ending it with The Curtain With, because it represented this really important moment in the band's development. And since then, since they came back in 3.0 and 4.0, the majority of the time that you hear the song The Curtain, it is The Curtain With. And that With section reminds me a lot of American Baby, in the sense that, like, the American Baby intro, in the sense that it's this segment of music that doesn't need to be there, but, and it's so simple, but the simplicity and the focus on dynamics and like melodies just slowly building is so powerful. Even if there's an expectation of what's going to happen, it really just adds this emotional climax wherever it's played in the concert. And you really get that with this. This was like this stretch, 41, American Baby intro, two-step, Ants Marching. This was it for me. And I know there's a lot of classics in here, but the idea that you said a song from 2005 could take over a show in this sort of manner, it's really impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always say less is Leroy Moore with this band, or less is more, M-O-O-R-E.
Yeah, yeah.
When they keep things simple and just let their talent shine, and there's not as much loud, like when you just build up a song and take it down, or two-step, you have this simple intro, and then Dave's talking about, I know you talked about in 04 in Alpine, he's talking about salute, you know, the troops, support the troops, but this two-step, it's a simple intro riff, and he's talking about bombs and wars and what do we do? What does it solve? What is, so he's like It's a simple backdrop, and now he's freestyle rapping. And I, you know, like I said, 07, I was listening to the Smack DVDs and the Cassidy freestyle, Lil Wayne free. I love how this two-step, he's like, you know, bombs and wars and what do we do? Like he's evolved from this. Okay, we said support it, but like we love the truth, but like listen, what is this song and
what is going on here?
Yeah, less is always more with this band, and this run also shows that they just play simple chords, simple riffs, let Tom do his crazy stuff. They play the two-step as they always do, but two-step just always is just a great time. Doesn't have to be complex, simple and fun and emotional.
Yeah. And we get into, that's a really good point about that song and like the backdrop that it offers for him to kind of riff about what he's feeling at the moment. Yeah. So last question for you about this show. So we get this double encore. We get Gravedigger, Jimmy Thing, rarely placed within the encore slot, Stay, and then they come back on for Don't Drink the Water and Pantala Nagapampa and Rapunzel. Tell me, I guess, two things here. One, how rare is it for them to play Jimmy Thing in the encore, and what is the significance? And two, how rare is it double encore, and what is the significance?
So in the modern era, Jimmy Thing is essentially not played in the encore ever. There may be a one-off here or there in the last day, but like that's typically a song in the middle of a set for people, for the OGs to go to the bathroom, because it's long enough, right? And we hear, if you've been to 15 shows, you've already heard it, probably half of those shows. So the fact that it's in the encore is extremely rare. And the double encore, this is why I just went to, of my 8 shows, 2 of them were at Alpine, 2 of them were at SPAC, and 2 of them were at Deer Creek. And I went to those venues because I wanted to have that double encore. I've been chasing double encores for the last decade. It doesn't happen often, and it typically only happens at a SPAC, an Alpine, a Deer Creek, kind of like Fish, those hallowed venues that get 2 or 3 nights. That's where you're getting the double encore or the Gorge.
Got it.
So it's not that frequent that you get it. I'm chasing it, but this is special to be in Europe, the first Portugal show, and to have that double encore. I'm, like, that's, people who were there from the States were probably like, yeah, this is one of the best shows I've ever been to.
Wow. And so even with this like first segment that is so focused on new material, like the ending of the show, this really kind of brings it back home as a classic show in your mind.
Yeah. Obviously there's, you know, you can't, a 2000 show or a 2004 show on paper may be better.
Sure.
But I think the emotional roller coaster, if you're an American fan or a European fan and you're seeing Dave at this special venue, Tom Morello hopping on for the first time ever with the
gives
band,
you a lot.
I think this is a show that's more memorable than even some of your other shows because of how special that is. Double encore, a lot of bangers back to back to back.
I love it. Marcus, you've provided so much context here and you've provided so much insight. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate all this.
I appreciate it. And if you guys are DMB fans, after every single show, about an hour after every show, I am live here on YouTube at ConcertViz34. I do the post-show stream. We talk to people from the show as they're in their car, in their Uber. And if you want to check out some post-show streams, have conversations with us, every show that Dave, and Tim, Dave Solo, I do a live stream. So you guys can check that out, YouTube ConcertViz34.
YouTube ConcertViz34, every single show live stream. I love it, man. We should talk more because we want to push that as much as possible. And when we return to Dave Matthews Band in the, I don't know when, but in the near future, we will return to this band to continue with the live tracks, because I'm looking at the next 10 volumes and we've got another 2000. We've got some 95. We've got some 08, some more 2000, 97, 96. It's a really interesting next set of shows, which obviously have significance historically, but also the Leroy releases, his last show, the first show without him. We're going to definitely have to have you back on because you provide a lot of insight and intel here that's helpful for us.
I appreciate it. I look forward to whoever you're covering next. I'm at the edge of my seat to see who else you're going to be having in for these live shows and what other live albums from different artists you're going to cover.
We got a big list, and I'm really excited about it, man. So we will we'll have you back on, and we're gonna push your post shows, man. So thank you so much, Marcus. This was such a great conversation, dude.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you.
Awesome, man. We will talk with you here soon.
Sounds good.
All right. That was awesome. Thank you so much once again, Marcus O'Neill, for joining us, hanging with us to talk through Dave Matthews Band Live Tracks Volume 10, 52507 from Lisbon, Portugal. As I mentioned at the top here, and as we were talking, this is where we pivot. We transition a bit with this show. We're going to try something completely new with the live show. We are moving to a new artist. We are going to be exploring the live catalog of the one and only Mr. Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band. Next 10 episodes for now are dedicated to Bruce Springsteen. One thing that we will, thank you, Robbie, for hanging with us here. Thank you so much. One thing just of note, we're going to be releasing, the week ahead of time, the shows that we will be covering, because, we were initially going to go through the live archive releases from the E Street Band. Not all of them are available on nugs.net for streaming. So we want to give everyone out there the opportunity to listen to these along with these overall episodes. So we're going to kind of be jumping around. We're not going in order the way that we did with the live track series. So it'll be a little bit different in that sort of standpoint. We are starting tomorrow, July 20th, 2022, with our first Springsteen episode covering 8/22/85 from Giant Stadium in New Jersey. An incredible show. Highly recommend you guys check it out on Nugs. It's amazing, amazing stuff. There's so much energy. Midway or latter point of the Born in the USA tour. Really incredible stuff. We're also going to be joined by our good friend Matt Dwyer, who is a Bruce Springsteen expert, devotee, deep dive insight, brilliant mind about this band. We're really, really excited to talk about it. And then we will on Thursday be jumping back 10 years to talk about 12/12/75 from Greendale, New York. And then starting next week, it'll be all three episodes each week will be Bruce Springsteen until we get at least at this point through 10 live archive releases. So check that out. Thank you to everyone out there for listening. Thank you to everyone out there for commenting. I hope that all of you DMB fanatics continue with us as we go through Bruce Springsteen. And as we go onward, we're going to come back at some point to Dave Matthews. I know I want to promise you all that. I don't know exactly when at this point. We're thinking kind of one band ahead, but I know that we will. And as Robbie Lewis suggested, String Cheese Incident down the road plus Billy Strings, these are all killer suggestions. We want to be able to be both in the pocket of the jam band community, but also outside of it and really celebrate kind of what makes a live concert and what makes a live concert release so special. So thank you everyone for hanging with us here. We'll be back tomorrow with more from the live show. Take care.
Osiris.